Welcome to the Church of England weekly podcast. In this week's edition, Joe Pearl from Trinity College Bristol talks to us about what they've been doing to mark a week of prayer for evangelism as part of Thy Kingdom Come.
Well, we've set up a prayer room, a creative interactive prayer space with different prayer stations, all following the theme of the Lord's Prayer. And that's open from early in the morning till late at night.
We also hear the Archbishop of Canterbury speak about Thy Kingdom Come after he was interviewed on Premier Christian Radio.
The psalmist in Psalm 44 says, look, you've sold your people, you haven't even got a decent price for us. And then he goes on to say, where are you asleep, God? Wake up! I mean, there's a real integrity and forcefulness. And I think that's a really good example of what prayer is. It's genuine engagement in relationship with God.
And Kat Pugh, head teacher of St Marylebone Church of England School, talks about her contribution to a new book, Schools for Human Flourishing.
Many of our students otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to learn by coming to church, by being part of a community that says faith isn't irrelevant. They wouldn't learn the values of rites and ritual and ceremony, prayer, whatever that means to them, silence, reflection, propriety even, the sense that sometimes you're quiet and you're respectful to other people's faiths.
Trinity College in Bristol has been taking part in the evangelistic prayer initiative in the lead up to Pentecost, Thy Kingdom Come, by setting up prayer spaces for students and others to use throughout the week. Jo Pearl, a member of the student executive body at Trinity, spoke to us about what's been going on and how they are planning to take their prayer for evangelism forward in the future. Jo, how is Trinity College marking the week of prayer for evangelism in the run-up to Pentecost?
Yes, well, we've set up a prayer room, a creative interactive prayer space with different prayer stations, all following the theme of the Lord's Prayer. And that's open from early in the morning till late at night, Monday to Friday this week. And also throughout the day, we are holding four different prayer meetings, just creating a rhythm of prayer throughout the day.
And how have you been personally marking this week of prayer?
I think personally, I've been sort of attending all the prayer sessions and just spending sort of extra time in the prayer room, just really making the most of the space and getting involved in all the different activities we've got throughout the week.
You mentioned that you've got the prayer spaces set up. What's been the highlight of the week so far for you, or maybe for the college, and what else are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think to see the students and the faculty and the staff really getting behind this sort of national initiative, and they're really enthusiastic about being part of it here at Trinity, sort of seeing students come to the different prayer meetings and really using the prayer space. There's sort of a real sense of momentum about prayer and what God is doing sort of in this land, and it's just been a real thrill to see people engaged. Tonight we have a half night of prayer from 8 till midnight, and that's something that we're really looking forward to as well, just an extended time where we come together as a community to really seek God and pray for our nation and beyond.
One of the things that makes this particular week of prayer so special is that the archbishops have encouraged churches, in fact every church across the country, to get involved with this. For you as a theological college, how encouraging is it to know that you're joining in with thousands of other Christians all across the country, all united in praying for evangelism?
Yeah, I think it's hugely significant. It feels really sort of a powerful sense of unity that that what we're doing here is something, part of something so much bigger. There's a sort of tangible sense of that. And as we're sort of hearing different reports of what's happening in churches across Bristol and sort of the country, we're very aware of that sense that we're part of a move of God that is so much bigger than just us, that's impacting, we trust, our nation and much further as well. So it's very exciting to be part of it.
Thy Kingdom Come finishes on Sunday the 15th with a number of beacon events across the country. But kind of going on further and looking towards the future, what are you planning? Have you got any plans for other evangelism projects, for more prayer? What else is happening after Thy Kingdom Come finishes?
Yes, well, our academic year finishes actually at the end of May, but we're very sort of expectant for a high intake of students in September for our new academic year. And there's a lot of prayer and plans already in place for our new sort of chapter with the new academic year starting then. So there's a real sense that we want to continue this momentum and continue with different prayer events and a real sense of so what God is doing in our nation, that we want to continue to be part of that. So we just want to be very alert to what the Spirit is saying to us as a college, as we train ordinands for the Church of England and as others come to study theology here. Yes, we really want to continue that prayer momentum.
The Archbishop of Canterbury was recently interviewed live on Premier Radio as he spoke on a number of things taking place across the Church of England. Premier began by asking him whether the country has the tendency to underestimate the power of prayer.
Yes, I think we all do to some degree. I remember John Wimber about 25 years ago saying that the only thing that was more surprising than a prayer not answered was a prayer answered. And he'd seen plenty of prayers answered. And it was that sense that we forget that when we pray, we engage with God. God changes us. And in some extraordinary way, he says to us, come alongside with me and change the world. That's the first thing. Second thing is this week of prayer, it seems to have touched a chord which none of us really expected to the degree it's happened. I mean, we've got the Port Stanley Cathedral in the Falkland Islands has joined in Thy Kingdom Come. There's people in Israel, there's people all over England and Wales, across the United Kingdom. It seems to have touched a really deep chord in which people find that they are motivated and excited by the idea of praying with others for those that they long to find the love of Jesus Christ.
Mm. The problem with prayer, of course, and why people very often doubt, is it's not a push-button system, is it?
No, right.
You don't sort of guarantee that this will happen if you pray.
Or if you pray in the right way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've all gone through it in our Christian lives, that sense, but if only I knew how to pray, I could get all my prayers answered. It just doesn't work that way. This is about God. I entirely agree. It's not a push-button system, but it is engaging with God. It's saying to God, this really matters. Mm. And it needs to be incredibly honest. I mean, I was reading Psalm 44 yesterday. The psalmist in Psalm 44 says, look, you've sold your people. You haven't even got a decent price for us. And then he goes on to say, where are you asleep, God? Wake up. I mean, there's a real integrity and forcefulness. And I think that's a really good example of what prayer is. It's genuine engagement in relationship with God.
Right. A few months ago, as you know, the Lord's Prayer was banned from our cinemas. And just yesterday, Christian charities have been claiming the advertising industry is biased against them as buses across England are set to carry adverts praising Allah this Ramadan. Do you think there is a bias against Christians?
If I'm really honest, no, I don't. I think there's ignorance. I think there's a sort of, oh, this is religion, we don't know quite how to deal with it. And if it's Christians, we're very confused by this. I don't think there's there will be in some people, obviously, because there always has been. The Bible tells us there always will be hostility to Christians. That's what Jesus tells us will happen. But there isn't a sort of systemic indigenous hostility in, I think, the advertising industry or anywhere else. I think there's a profound ignorance.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. And I suppose this was a different people who banned it from the cinema, who have allowed it for the Muslims on the buses. It is a bit of a random thing, isn't it?
Seems to be random. It probably depends on who you get on the day, to be honest.
You came to faith as a young adult, I understand, in part because of an invitation to an evangelistic event. How vital is it that we equip others with the good news? And how difficult is that in an age where most people seem to know so little about the gospel?
I think if you go back to 1944-45, there was a report for the Church of England called Towards the Conversion of England,
right,
prepared for William Temple. And it said, there will never be a conversion of England until every Christian disciple is equipped to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That was 1944-45.
Right.
And I think that has always been one of the greatest weaknesses in many churches, not just Church of England churches, but many churches, that we do not spend enough time equipping people to share their faith.
Finally this week, we hear from the head teacher of St Marylebone C of E School in London. Kat has not only contributed to a new book as a result of a joint initiative between the Church of England Education Office, Woodard Schools and the School Student and Teachers Network, but also has a passion for promoting the positive impact church schools can have on students. St Marylebone Church of England School is 225 years old this year. Can you tell me a bit about the original purpose of the school and how this is played out today?
So, yes, we're 225 years old, and the school was set up originally as a small church school, one of the national schools, serving a local community. And the point was in a Christian mission to serve local people who could not afford an education. So in terms of that purpose of serving a local community, that has very much been brought alive, I'd say, since the 90s. And we're now one of the top performing non-selective state schools in London. It's very much a multi-faith, multi-ethnic community, as the area really has been for a long time. But what's been really important in order to maintain those values has been that we've continued to be a comprehensive school. So while we are a church school, we also have a comprehensive intake of students. We're not selective on ability. And that's really important because obviously a Christian mission that seeks to look after the all and everyone, where all are welcome, you know, regardless of faith, actually needs to be aware that Marylebone, if you live in Marylebone, you might come from a certain kind of social background, and we need to maintain a very comprehensive intake.
You mentioned about the multi-faith community that exists in Marylebone. As a Christian school, but with that multi-faith community, what role does faith have in the community itself, both in learning and in spiritual contexts?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting part of being a church school, actually, in such a multi-faith environment. I think, actually, we have a duty in a world where to bury your head in the sand about the role of religion and faith in the world would just be really ignorant. And I think we have a duty to make questions of faith, questions of spirituality and religion, an obvious and explicit and non-taboo part of daily dialogue in the school. And so that ranges from our weekly assemblies, which are held in the beautiful Marylebone Church. But those weekly assemblies, while based in a Christian values and Christian doctrine, they are quite explicitly reflecting a multi-faith cohort. Everybody comes to church, and everybody's needs and sense of faith or no faith is reflected in those assemblies. And of course, what that highlights is that people of all faiths and people of no faith can be united around a set of very grounded in kindness, good values. And in a sense, regardless of what name you give to those do unite us. So that's one part of assemblies are one thing, but that's replicated across our activities day in, day out, including teaching RS and religious studies, which is, again, something that's sometimes misinterpreted. Isn't religious teaching, it's learning about the role of religion in the world, and that includes questions of ethics and questions of quite important social standing. I think there are other things that happen across the school. That's things like debates on something like the Charlie Hebdo attacks. That's something that we would readily respond to with a whole school debate, where you've got people with very differing views on things coming together to talk about the difference between freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and what it means, where tolerance stops, and what it means to be tolerant and so on. And I think those sorts of discussions about what it means to have faith, what it means to be tolerant, are very much an explicit part of becoming a young person in our school. And I remember when I first started here, when I overheard students talking to each other, there was a girl in one of my classes who had decided to start wearing a headscarf. I remember just overhearing a conversation at the beginning of a lesson. Oh, so, you know, how come you decided to start wearing a headscarf again? And the girls just, it wasn't a taboo thing. People can really openly talk about questions of faith. And I do know that that isn't everyone's cup of tea, but what it does do is it takes a stand against ignorance. It generates a literacy in questions of faith, which is so important if we're going to overcome some of the areas of interfaith conflict, which quite often are based in ignorance. And when you've got young people who have been educated in an environment where they are encouraged to debate, discuss, query, say, well, no, it doesn't actually work like that. That's not what Christians think, or that's not what Jews think, or that's not what Muslims think, or that's not what people who don't have a faith think. You know, it breeds a sense of confidence and articulacy and oracy that actually sometimes the parents of our children are really grateful for, because they think they've got to tiptoe around these sort of issues. I mean, other things that articulate what it means to be a Christian school in a multi-faith community are things like the role of our school chaplain. You see, he uses a lot of humour and candidness in terms of his relationships with students around the school. He did a faith fact-finding survey to find out what our students thought about being part of a church school. He's been part of our RS conferences, and those happen with each year group. We put God in the dock, and we hear from all different sides and points of view about the role of God in today's world. What it says is that matters of faith do matter, and we just don't have to be shy about that. And I think there's another thing about what it means to be a Christian school in a multi-faith community. Many of our students otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to learn by coming to church, by being part of a community that says faith isn't irrelevant. They wouldn't learn the values of rites and ritual and ceremony, prayer, whatever that means to them, silence, reflection, propriety even, the sense that sometimes you're quiet and you're respectful to other people's faiths, stillness, and really authentic and really relevant connections between things that religion says and the world today. And I think that regardless of whether they believe in a Christian God or not, whether they believe in another God or no God at all, it's important that we help them acknowledge that at the age of 11, their sense of religion, their sense of faith, their sense of God may develop an ebb and flow, waver, and it might grow, and it might be very different by the time they're age 18, and that happens. And we encourage them to accept and embrace and articulate that. But meantime, regardless of what happens in that ebb and flow, while from 11 to 18, they've learned that variety and diversity are facts of modern life. And so those things do need to be regarded with tolerance and probably with a sense of curiosity rather than fear and ignorance. And I know I talk to adults who quite often, when you get into conversation about faith and religion, it turns into a conversation that is based in fear and ignorance and not something based in an education of tolerance or curiosity.
That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @C_of_E and like our Facebook page to stay up to date with news during the week. Thanks for listening.